All right. This is great. We welcome Victoria. This
Thank
is
you.
News for the Heart. It's a brand new show.
Wow.
We are going to be on, we're producing on both intuitivesoul.com and we're producing on bmajor.org. And we're on Blog Talk Radio. So we are just like getting all over the place.
Good.
This is good. This
yeah.
is going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
I'm very excited to have you. I know that we've tried a few times
yeah.
to do this.
The universe is saying, not yet.
Not yet. But we are going to, we're going to have some fun today. And we are going to talk about you. You've got a great new book, and we actually have it, and you can actually see that it is, this is going to be a little crazy. Okay, here we go. Find Yourself Culture.
Moving from depression and anxiety to monumental self-acceptance.
Okay, so this is a big book. Now, it just came out not
yeah.
too long ago.
November was launched.
Right. And it's very exciting because
yeah.
it's a holistic approach to depression and anxiety.
That's right. Absolutely. So many people have come to me, interestingly enough, from psychiatric offices at
right.
a level.
It's okay.
Yeah, from psychiatric offices where they've been doing work with their depression and anxiety for years and nothing was changing. So that's the question is why? Why is it not changing? Why is it that they're with sort of a top-of-the-line kind of guy, gal, woman, PhD, psychiatry person, and they're on a medication.
Right.
And they're not talking. They're just being, their meds are being managed. That's it. And there's no processing. There's no understanding. There's no opportunity for transformation, really. And so they seek out someone like myself, someone who, I mean, I have a master's degree and
yes.
I have all those, right? Bells and whistles for the educational piece, but I bring 8 years of holistic-based Eastern philosophy modalities, body-centered modalities to the picture.
Right.
So it is tackling at it at a very different level, at a much different level.
And you're adding it like the dimension to it that is not being offered in traditional
yeah.
Psychotherapy. Okay, so...
Or psychiatry anyways.
Right.
And in traditional psychotherapy as well, because I'm bringing body-centered work. We're
right.
doing body-centered work.
Right.
I'm a trauma specialist as well. So, you know, it's really slowing down the nervous system that really changes the person.
Right.
It's very powerful and transformational.
Right. It's beautiful. I mean, it's great stuff. I'm going to be very excited to read your book. I'm sorry that we didn't get a chance to do that before the
okay,
interview.
You've known me and you've seen my website.
I know you.
Yeah,
yes.
yeah, exactly. You've seen my stuff in many ways. So
one of your claims is that we're at an all-time high of depression and
yes.
anxiety. What's going on?
You know, I've done a lot of research. I've started writing this book in 2007 and I've been in private practice for like 20 years. And so what I'm noticing is that people are coming in much more anecdotally for depression and anxiety. And so the question I think has to be, why is it so high right now? And it's so interesting. I was at an author symposium last night, as I was saying, and I was chatting with some other self-published authors, and I was chatting with one of the gals, and we were talking about, there was this gentleman talking to us about an app. You know, it's not just about websites now. It's not just
about
Twitter. It's not just about Facebook. You've got to now buy an app that is your app. And she just looked deflated. And I said, what's happening? Are you okay? She says, I can't keep up. As soon as I get used to something, the next thing is here.
It's
and
true.
As soon as I get used to that, the next thing is here. So people are feeling, I believe, nervous system-wise, extremely overwhelmed.
Yeah.
And not only overwhelmed, I think they are also experiencing a sense of defeatism, as in, can I ever keep up? Will
right.
I be able to ever keep up, really? Truly.
Right.
And I think that people were very success driven and we have an inner bully in us. I talk a lot about
yes.
the inner bully that says, do more, be more, get more, go more, faster, faster, faster. And the system is saying, I can't. It's mm-hmm. too much. It's too much. I hands up in the air. I surrender. It's too much. And then some people will experience self-esteem loss as a result of that.
Right.
And because they're thinking, you know, I should be able to keep up, you know.
Right, right.
Johnny's keeping up. Mary's keeping up. I'm not keeping up. What's that about?
Mm-hmm.
Comparison thinking. And then that will cause people to feel, I mean, that's just one of the reasons I believe that their depression and anxiety has been at an all-time high. There are other reasons, and I can go on and on and on. I can talk for an hour, no problem, on what I think the causes of why depression and anxiety are so high right now.
Well, it's just an interesting time. I think... energetically, even spiritually, it's a time where if things feel like they're in a bit of a frenzy, things feel like we're being pushed and pushed. And so I think that may be adding to that, because I think those people that are sensitive, those people that are, you know, in the more holistic field, I mean, they're the ones, I think, that are really feeling that connection more and not really understanding, because sometimes it can be very overwhelming. And I think we get caught up in that energy of go, 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 and do, 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 instead of, you know, being in that center place of being. And I think that's where we kind of, you know, it's all got to start from within.
Yeah.
It can't be outside, but everything outside is what's bombarding us.
One of the biggest challenges that I work with in terms of when I'm working with clients is people realizing how externally based approval seeking they are. You know, externally based approval seeking. You know, my book is called Find Yourself Culture. Okay. So what's that about, right? So we come from a family culture.
Right.
We come from a country culture. We come from a religiosity culture, possibly some of us. And, you know,
most of us have started there.
Exactly. Yeah. There's something that is either imposed upon us or mentioned or whatever.
Right.
So what happens is we get lost in a lot of that family culture, which is a collection of patterns that is passed down generationally. That's the meat of it. That's the meat of a family culture. What happens, though, is often there's a situation where the self culture is completely put on the absolute back burner in favor of the benefiting of the family culture.
Mm-hmm.
And then the family culture is often using a lot of stuff that's not healthy, you know, manipulation, guilting, shaming, anger, belittling, mocking, controlling. We could go on and on about what family, and by the way, I need to say, there's some really positive family culture there. You know, so it's not about all negative, but, you know, I'm a psychotherapist, so who ends up in my office are folks that are involved or have been the product of extremely, or not even extremely, even mildly, but some sort of toxic, unhealthy, negative family culture that has prevented them from being able to even know what their own self culture is. And that's a collection of patterns and behaviors and ways of being that are authentically ours, you know, filling ourselves first. And so we're trained to look for approval outside of ourselves. We're trained to not have needs. We're trained to be just pretty well at the function of the external as a matter of second nature for us, for a lot of us. You know, it's not even something that we have to work at. That's what we do. It's like, oh, does mom approve of us? Does dad approve of us? Does, you know, neighbor approve of us? Does teacher approve of us? Does school approve of us? And if it does not, then, you know, are we less than? Are we not good enough? Are we just not worth much? Which is what people tend to experience when they're experiencing depression and anxiety.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
People can relate, I'm sure.
We can all relate.
Yeah.
We can all relate.
But there is a way out. It's not a bad news story only, right?
Right.
Yeah, it's, you know, absolutely.
And that's the holistic way. And that's looking at some of our, I guess, you know, the one thing I liked that you talked about is, you know, moving beyond it, using a holistic approach, rewiring the brain. Do you want to talk about what that
is? Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Big time.
Okay.
It's the key thing, really. It's one of the key things. So with every single thought we have, and especially the thoughts, and here's a clue, the thoughts that are the long-held beliefs and thoughts that we inherited from family culture are associated with neural pathways.
Okay.
Big neural pathways.
Right.
And the longer we've had that belief, the longer we've held that thought, the thicker the neural pathway. Like a highway. Like the 401.
Right.
New thoughts, new beliefs, also associated with neural pathways, right? But like footpaths, like little sort of imagine a footpath in the middle of a field that is sort of just trampled on, the grass is trampled on, it's just starting to form. You can just start to see the earth. That is the neural pathway. In fact, when you are looking at, I've never seen this, but I've read some amazing work by a gentleman called Dr. Norman Doidge, who wrote a book called The Brain That Changes Itself. He's actually out of Toronto, but he has been part of John Hopkins University and studies at Harvard. And he really, you know, he describes actually seeing when they're looking at it on film, on a camera, what's actually happening with neural pathways as you're trying to create new neural pathways, or when you're actually reinforcing old neural pathways.
Right.
So this is obviously can be very complicated, or in my belief, extremely simple, very simple, which is to change your life, you need to change your thoughts. But to change your thoughts, you need to be mindful that there's a whole biology going on of
right.
neural pathways that are going to say, no, 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 you're not going to change that belief that we've held for, you know, generations. Forget that. Well, you're gonna just hang on. That's why you have to be doubly focused and doubly aware when you're trying to create a new behavior.
Mm-hmm.
So rewiring the brain is all about multi-leveled ways of changing your thinking. You can't just say, I am now going to think that I like myself. It doesn't work on the verbal, right?
No.
Many people think, well, now I know that I should do that and that's what I'll do. No, it has to be, you have to think about that in many, many ways. You have to meditate on it, visualize it. I tell people that one of the best, most effective ways to change your behavior is to think about the new thought while doing a new behavior. And that will start, the more activity you involve in your physical being as you're changing your emotional being is the more likely you will be successful at changing your neural pathway associated with a new belief. So a little bit long of a sentence, but you have to imagine that, like I like doing affirmations. I will tape the affirmation, put it in my ear, and go on my treadmill.
Nice.
And then visualize whatever it is that affirmation is.
Right.
So it's multi-sensorial, multi-layered, you know, changing your brain and being extremely. So the image. Can we do this?
Yep.
Can you see the image? The image is a woman.
There we go.
Chiseling herself out of concrete, right?
Cool.
I had this image, the thought of this image years ago. Chiseling herself out of concrete, right? So what is that? What is that? Why did I think about that as a page, a beautiful picture for my book? Because we need to take a pickaxe in our mind, really chisel through the concrete thoughts. Chisel through the concrete thoughts.
Right.
There's no other way. Right. If there is a belief that says, I don't deserve good things to happen in my life, or I am not valuable, or I should always be last in my priority list, or I should give to others because that's better and more, holy than to fill my own self. And every time you give to others, you feel better, and every time you give to yourself, you don't. These are really strong thoughts.
Yeah.
So you literally need to say, take a pickaxe to that thought and chisel through it. So you are challenging the concretized beliefs that you have inherited unconsciously.
Hmm. Yeah, it's an interesting, like it's, beliefs are so ingrained. And most of the time we don't know them, but we also don't know that self-talk underneath. Like we don't know where...
The running commentary.
Right. And where it's come from and whether it's even ours. Most of the time it isn't. It's from our parents. It's from school. It's from, you know, anybody that we've walked by, you know, like...
Yeah.
Like everything. I mean, there's so many places that it can happen. It's interesting. I've done a lot of work around it at my own. And I took... part of the shows that I had this two guys from Australia, and they wrote a book called M-Braining.
Oh, yes.
And they're dealing with the three different brains, the mind, the heart, and the gut.
Yeah.
And it's fascinating because it adds a different dimension to understanding and, you know, coming from that place. Because, you know, I know one of the things that you talk about is forgiveness.
Mm-hmm.
And forgiveness is so huge. And a lot of people say, but I have forgiven. And sometimes we forgive with our head, which is a very mental concept of forgiveness. Mm-hmm. And that's usually where it starts first. And then, you know, we may get it down into our hearts and we may forgive there. But there's this concept of forgiveness in our gut because that's our mm-hmm. self-preservation and that's how we digest
right.
things.
Mm.
And that if we don't get it in the gut, and that's where most people fail, like they may feel this, you know, wealth of opening up when they've forgiven. So you know it's come from the heart. But then it comes back again, and it comes back again, and it comes back again.
And why is it coming back again?
Because we haven't
done it. It's not full, exactly. full forgiveness.
Exactly. It's not complete.
Yeah.
So it's interesting. And
yeah.
so that's where our beliefs are as well. Like some of our beliefs may come from, well, they all come from our mind. I mean, they're all mental concepts that mm-hmm. we have. But we need to incorporate the other things. We need to incorporate the feeling. We need to be able to adjust some of the things that mm-hmm. we've taken on from our parents or our teachers or our bosses. And so it's very interesting how ingrained some of these things are and how we can really move through them.
You know, people, I've worked with all kinds of people. Recently, I was working with somebody who is overcoming sexual abuse.
Mm.
And, you know, she's like, well, how can I, you know, it happened 30 years ago kind of thing, you know, yet she's talking about present day relationships just being not successful because every time she experiences intimacy and emotional intimacy and giving of herself, there's this, you know, block immediately that happens and she starts to feel suspicious and uncomfortable and anxious. And yet the person in her life is kind of great, kind of
right.
a, kind of a, you know, good person, you
right.
know? And so, they're going, why is this going on? You know, we're having a good relationship. This is not, you know.
Right.
So that's the crux of why this person is in my office, right? So we talk about forgiveness. And she's like, well, I've forgiven, you know, like, whatever. It's over. It's 30 years ago. Whatever.
Yeah.
It's done, you know. It's like it's not with me anymore. But it is.
Right.
On a cellular memory level.
Right.
And so what we worked with was three things. One, I did a wonderful seminar with a gentleman called at a conference called Dr. Klassen, who's like a specialist on forgiveness. And he said something fantastic, which is you need to give the person who was hurt, the person who was somehow victimized or hurt by somebody trespassed upon, whose trust was broken, has to give themselves permission to not forgive. That's the first step toward forgiveness, you know, giving themselves permission to not forgive, to not do what is everyone recommends,
expected.
You know, exactly. It's good to forgive, you know.
Right.
You've got to kind of give yourself an opportunity to say, you know what, I really don't want to forgive. I really don't want to forgive, and I want to just hold on to this, and I'm giving myself a moment to really, really just be me and in my true feelings about it.
Right.
That experience is huge for people because it does lead them every time, by the way, every time down the road of forgiveness.
Right.
Because they can't hold on to all that anger and bitterness and resentment. It's not sustainable. It destroys them. And they can feel that destruction starting to happen. So they fill themselves up with non-forgiveness.
Right.
And it's like an inhaling of non-forgiveness. And guess what? Every inhale has an exhale that needs to come. And that exhale is the letting go, the beginning aspect of letting go of the non-forgiveness. And then what the person is often left with, I have found, is, you know, emptiness, you know, mm-hmm. you know, I've got nothing now. I got nothing now. I can't keep blaming that person,
right.
you know. And there's this opportunity to, and this is a hard one, what I'm about to say, the next second step, this opportunity to go, how did this, I call it transcendence thinking, how did this event in some way benefit me?
Right.
Which is so hard. It's like, oh God, you know, this horrible pedophile, you know, and you're like, what? You're asking me this horrific question? And yeah. And I am. I'm brave to ask you this question. So after you've gone through how many ever time, weeks, whatever, of I'm not forgiving, no problem. Don't forgive. Be with that non-forgiveness. Then the person will walk in and says, I can't live with this bitter feeling inside me anymore. So let's go to the next step, which is, so tell me about what you learned here.
Right.
Tell me about what this event taught you.
And there's so many things.
Oh, I mean, my God, yes.
You know, like
right.
Part of it is the energy you get from people, like that part of that story, right? That
there's
as
that.
You talk about it,
yeah.
You know. And
good point.
It's kind of a difficult topic because...
It's horribly difficult.
You know, I deal with a lot of clearing stuff, so I help people to try and clear it. But,
mm-hmm.
You know, there's a lot of people that, you know, are so attached
to the wound.
Yeah, and that's their identity. That becomes who they are.
Yeah.
That.
So they get to have an identity. That's one benefit.
Right, right.
That's one benefit.
An identity that may be negative, but gives them a positive reaction or response from people. Or, you know, there's a whole bunch of things. So keep going.
So there's all kinds of stuff. So there's another benefit to the event is they get to learn how strong they are.
Mm.
That's huge. You know, I was working with someone who thought she was always a very weak, weak, weak person. And I like, well, look at how much you have survived and look at what you've created out of your life. You're not in an alleyway putting a needle up your arm. You have
right.
children. You are, you know, productive. You are healthy. You are, you know, you're going forth in life. So you get to know and see and witness how strong you are.
Right.
That's another huge benefit.
Huge.
And I think it is the... one of the bigger benefits of really, really looking at those events that are terribly difficult, you know.
Right.
Other benefits might be you get to see how much compassion you hold, you know. There's this thing around holding the secret.
Yeah.
And usually it's because you're feeling sorry for the
yes,
perpetrator.
Yes, 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 yes.
And that's a level of compassion, actually. There's a level of, I don't want to harm somebody, you know, and then compassion for self.
It's this bit about how we feel we have to do what we think is right or what other people have told us is right.
That's right.
So, you know, a perpetrator that may be a family member, that's a difficult one.
Huge. And it's most common.
Of course it is.
Frankly,
yes,
it's the most common type of,
yes.
Of sexual abuse.
Yes,
so it's very, very. In particular, I'm thinking about someone who just couldn't bear the thought of having her father lose face.
Right.
You know, even though she had been, you know, molested.
Right.
She did not want her father, who she really saw wasn't all bad. He was a horrible pedophile, but also he was not the devil. He, you know. Paid for the, and this is not about you know glorifying the abuser. This is about finding a way to transcend the event where you're not always the victim of the event.
Right.
Finding a way to transcend the event where you're not constantly identifying as the victim of the event.
And that's
and you got to chisel it open and look at all aspects of it. It's
and
pretty powerful.
It is. It's very powerful, and it's you know understanding at some level that our responsibility. But not that we're to blame.
No. They live on opposite sides of the same spectrum.
Exactly.
You know,
one's
with,
empowering,
yeah.
One's very disempowering.
Exactly. And then there's the notion of, you know, blame, you know, and blame. Oh, my gosh. You know, living in blame. So many people live in self-blame over these things that occur. You know, how did they find themselves in this situation? Why didn't they tell anybody? Why didn't they yell and scream? I mean, this, you got to have self-compassion to be able to really, really see that really, 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 you know, as a child or as a young person, sometimes you have no power, no choice, no voice. And you've got to be really have a tremendous amount of compassion for that kid.
Right.
And I do a lot of work visualizing a person dialoguing with that child in their mind's eye, really, really making themselves the parent and the child that went through this, the child and the experience of reparenting, sort of rewiring the whole thing about creating trust with a parent and having you, the adult, who might have gone through it and grown up, having a dialogue with that part of you, which is that child, that little kid, and doing things like imagining yourself taking that child, putting the child in your arms, brushing the hair of that child, smelling the skin of that child, and whispering in the ear saying, you're safe. I'm here. I will never abandon you, and you can count on me. You can count on me. Mm-hmm. And that visualization is so healing and so powerful when you're trying to, again, rewire the pathway of, say, profound lack of trust. Reparenting, very powerful. And visualizing it. Spending time visualizing it.
And feeling it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, those are the things you have to do, right? Those are the things we have to do to sort of get ourselves understanding. The damage that's done, though, is that that becomes our definition of love. We think that...
Yeah, you overcouple.
Because it's our parents, because it's mm-hmm. usually a parental figure, and it's not always the father that's at blame here.
No.
Sometimes it's the mother.
Absolutely.
But because we think that they're our primary caregivers and that's what we've seen from birth up, that's our definition of love.
Like, yeah.
So then we keep recreating that because that's our only definition of love because we feel it has to. I mean, how could a child determine anything other than mm-hmm. that's our definition of love?
It's a massive breach.
Yeah.
It's a massive breach. But I want to share with the listeners also a very important visualization technique.
Lovely.
So we just did one, which is the reparenting, which is to close your eyes and to imagine yourself as the parent, the adult parent, truly, truly caring for in a very loving, in a very trust-building way mm-hmm. with a child and allowing that child to be the most important person in your thinking. Is this child safe? Is this child okay? And I encourage people to act as if that child is always with them when they're making decisions,
mm-hmm.
you know, when they're choosing who they're going to choose to bring into their life, when they're choosing what job, think about the child. And is that child okay? You know, is that child, you know, would that child be okay with you creating this relationship with this person? Would that child be okay with you living where you're living? Would that child be okay if you're eating what you're eating? Would that child be okay? And you've got to really hear that child as a priority in your life. And that is how you create self-value, self-care, self-nurturing, mm-hmm. self-culture. That's really, and here's another really, really great one for anxiety. We have time, right?
We have lots of time.
Yeah. So anxiety is, oh my God, so common. We were talking about so common. And it's often from a fried nervous system.
Right.
The nervous system is overwhelmed, overwrought. Usually, again, not always, but often, people who experience anxiety come from homes that are, the family culture is violent. Or volatile, where you don't know what's going to happen next. Is daddy going to be in a bad mood?
Right.
You know, is
walking on eggshells.
Walking on eggshells. These are families with lots of addiction, so that there's, you know, you're up, you're down, you're around, what's going on, who's in a good mood, what do I have to do to survive? What? Fight, flight, fight, flight, fight, flight. So the sympathetic nervous system is overly activated. Which is the fight-flight response.
Right.
And another common trait of people who experience, I mean, it runs in families, right?
Right.
It runs in DNA. It runs in generations. Yeah. So anxiety is rarely just one person has it. No, it's generational.
Yeah.
It's generational. But it is often a perfect storm. It doesn't necessarily mean you're going to have anxiety if your parent had it. But, you know, it's often what occurs. I'm just going to keep going on anxiety. I work with many, many pieces to help with anxiety, supplements and visualization and therapy, psychotherapy, all of it. But here's an amazing visualization. So anyone who's listening who has anxiety will often experience a part of their body that constantly gets tight or
yes.
super, super tense as soon as they're experiencing that anxiety. So it's often in the stomach, all of those neural receptors in the stomach. People will have difficult stomach or tightening of the chest or neck pain or wrist, whatever it is. It's
right.
a part of the body that is experiencing the physical manifestation of that emotional experience.
Right.
And so I have people close their eyes, and I invite anyone who's listening to do that. And to imagine that inside themselves is a mini submarine. a little yellow submarine. And they are inside the submarine. And they are the captain of the submarine. And they have the control of how to run that submarine, whether it goes forward or backward or wherever it's going. So that submarine, you have to place yourself inside the submarine, and you put the submarine inside your body, and it is traveling very slowly, which you are controlling, traveling very slowly to the part of your body that is extremely tight. And you go right to that little spot. And they're just floating there and observing the tightness in the body. Going around to the different parts of the tightness and just looking at it. And then you finally found a spot where you're just beautifully observing that tightness. And you're dialoguing with the tightness. And you're actually saying to the tightness, I'm not going to yell at you. I'm not going to tell you to go away. I simply want you to talk with me because I want to understand you. It's so powerful that. Just the beginning. That's just the beginning of it. And you just wait. And the biggest question is, what are you here to tell me? What are you here to tell me? You know, stop ignoring it. Stop covering it up. Stop hiding. Tell me. What are you here to tell me?
Right.
That's the first question. And you wait and you find out. And usually will come and says, well, I'm here to protect you.
Yeah, that's a big one.
That's a huge one. Anxiety is here to protect me. What the heck is that? The anxiety is here. People are incredibly surprised when they learn that anxiety is there to protect them. And the obvious question is, protect me from what? You know? Oh, I don't know. Protect you from disappointment, from expecting too much, from doing too much, from wanting too much, you know, from taking on too much.
Yeah.
You know? So there's this tightening that occurs. It says, whoa, 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 don't go any further. Don't go any further. You know, you can't handle it.
Right.
You can't handle it. You need to lock up somewhere and isolate because you can't handle it.
Because as a child, we didn't have any mechanisms to handle it.
Correct.
We weren't able to.
That's right. Nobody was there. Maybe they were left to their own devices. Or maybe you know, there's someone who speaks with an accent and it's too difficult to be in this country. You know, whatever. It could be so many things that cause social anxiety, regular anxiety, generalized anxiety. So you continue with that journey, and I usually do closed eyes and people covering their eyes while we're doing this sort of psychotherapy, but from a visual perspective, where you're dialoguing with the tightness. And usually, if you're on track, that particular tightness, which you found to be a certain color, a certain texture, a certain size, will start to change. And will start to change its color, will start to change its texture, will start to change its whole size and its power. It'll often start off dark and huge and ugly and menacing, and it'll start to become less that. A different color will usually happen. It'll become more manageable, something that you can actually, you know, dialogue with quite easily. So it's a journey. It's a journey of not just letting it be there. People say, I need to go away from the anxiety. I say, go toward it so you can dialogue with it, so you can break it open, so you can chunk it down, so you can actually be more in charge of it than it being in charge of you.
Right. We do have a caller.
Oh, great.
Would you like to? I'm not quite sure where they're from. It's a 206 number. So.
Hey. I got to get my water.
Okay. Hi, you're with News of the Heart.
Hello.
Hi, do you have a question for Victoria?
No, I was actually listening to the program. This is Raul.
Hey, Raul, how are you?
I'm doing great. I'm very excited to just participate. I know I actually listen. The only way I can do it, listening, so I didn't necessarily have a question because everything is absolutely beautiful message. So.
Hi, Raul, how are you?
I'm doing great. You know that... I guess I can come up with a question.
Hey, I'm here for you.
I have Yeah, I have digestion issues for a while, and it's all the anxiety stuff, you know, growing up and everything that you were talking about. It resonates with me. And, you know, I think in general, what is the best way or how often or what is the best way to approach it when you notice some kind of relief or when things go away?
What is the best way to approach what? Sorry, say it again.
Basically, you know, the visualization and everything that you're talking about, you know,
right.
It's a constant process. And how, when do you start? I know that the world reacts to you in a way differently when you let go of this anxiety. But
right.
In general, how often do you recommend to just going through processes like this?
You know, I have to tell you, Raul, more often than not. Because remember, you're trying to reach your brain. You have an autopilot reaction that causes your nervous system to immediately go into a certain set of neural pathways where the anxiety shows up. So you have a repetitive habituation on this particular pattern called the anxiety. So I want to really recommend that you visualize extremely often. In the back of my book, I have like 10 different exercises. And I have to tell you, they're what I use every day in the office, and that is why what I do is really successful, because people really, really do use the exercises, and they're managing, thankfully, to change their neural pathways associated with anxiety. So this one that I just did with the submarine, did you hear it?
Yeah, yes, I did.
I want you to do that. I want you to imagine very quietly breathing in a nice calm room, closing your eyes. You want to imagine that submarine and go into the submarine and go right to the part of your stomach that experiences the tightness. And I want you to first observe it and describe it. And then I want you to dialogue with it. Dialogue with it. Don't go away from it. Dialogue with it. Can you do that? Will you do that?
Oh, yeah, definitely. It's a great exercise. I do Reiki myself at times, and I put my hand to try to get some communication with my belly, which is, I know, is most of this, it's just, you know, all the emotion is stored.
Yes.
But the other thing is, it's so incredible that you get anxious when the stuff that you really, really want and stuff that you really deserve is in front of you.
Yeah, and that's the thing that you're saying. It's like almost like people experiencing success and going, oh, my God, you know, crazy anxiety when I'm getting the success that I've been wanting kind of energy.
Yeah.
Is that what you're talking about, Raul?
Oh, yes, a little bit of everything. I mean, I want to have a great relationship with a beautiful woman, and every time the beautiful woman with great personality comes up, I start shaking. And it's nothing to do with, you know, being afraid of women, but it's something to do with, like, oh, this person actually is somebody who I might be attracted to. And then all the anxiety comes up.
You know what, Raul?
It's not excitement. Mm-hmm.
Would you be able to find – would you want to do a little exercise right now?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Ready?
Yep.
So that part, it's okay, good news. I got really good news for you, Raul. It's not all of you. It's just a part of you that feels this, because there's other parts of you that are completely at ease with beautiful women. Right? There's just this one part of you that seems to be not so at ease with, well, that anxiety happens and shaking happens when a beautiful woman is in your life, it sounds like. So you got to sort of visualize this part of you that's nervous and shaking when a beautiful woman is with you. So there's this part of you. Are you in touch with this part of you as we're talking right now?
In touch meaning the feeling?
As in, are you aware of this part of you? You may not be in front of a beautiful woman right now, but you can imagine when you are with a beautiful woman. Can you imagine that part of you?
Yes, I know what it is. I think it's sort of in my throat and my chest area. It's an overwhelming feeling. Yes.
Great. Overwhelming. Great. So get into that submarine. Go into the submarine and just sort of observe that physical part of you. Observe that physical part of you. And have a little dialogue and ask the question, what are you trying to do for me here? Like, what are you trying to do for me? And see if an answer comes.
I'm thinking about what you said earlier, you know, the protection part.
Right.
But I think there's something else in there.
I do too. I, by the way, do too. Yeah. Sometimes people have a little bit of fear around commitment phobia. I talk about commitment phobia, you know, that they feel. does that ring
me out of the visual? Yeah, that took me out of the visualization. But yes, of course it is. Yeah.
Yeah, it's like also people, you know, I'm going to generalize as opposed to personalize. Sometimes what I hear people saying is that when I'm in a relationship with someone who really loves me or really cares about me, they suddenly start to feel pressure and demanded upon, even though they may not be being demanded upon, but they start to feel pressure and demanded upon as if somehow, you know, they need to provide for the other person everything, because often they've come from a family culture where their parent, possibly their mother, depending, has put a lot of pressure on them through guilt and shame to be a certain way. And then does that make any sense?
It makes a lot of sense. Yes, it does. The extra giving, and the other one is, you know, you're talking about commitment. I lost my train of thought. I'm sorry. I was going to say something else.
Well, commit phobia. I think that's something to really maybe explore, Raul.
Yeah. Even though I think I'm very committed, I think that the loss of freedom, you know, that I'm going to have to basically commit and lose all my freedom, which is not a whole lot. I want to be committed, but the freedom that, you know, being questioned all the time, I really have trouble when I get two questions in the same minute. I get trouble with being questioned about me or things in general.
Yeah. Right. And the work
big.
The work to do, Raul, I just have to tell you, is to separate your whole relationship to women, how it was with mom, to how it will be with adult women. You have a right to say no, Raul. You have a right to say no. You have a right to draw boundaries. You have a right to your own personal space, just like the person in your life does. It's, you know, I'm all about long-term, passionate, committed relationships. What they're about is a lot of freedom, not a lot of guilting, not a lot of controlling, you know, and people don't get that. People, you know, I do a lot of couples work, I got to say, Lori, and they come in and it's like, well, isn't a good relationship where I should know wherever he is or she is?
Yeah.
You know, isn't that what it's supposed
it.
To be? You know, I mean, shouldn't he be calling me at every hour to tell me where he is? And I'm like, hey, here we go.
I'm feeling anxious already.
What's that?
I'm feeling anxious already.
I know. And I'm here to say, people, redefine healthy relationships.
Yeah.
And don't have it based on your family culture. Am I screaming now? Sorry.
Listen, but that's why we're fine.
You know, don't have it be based on your family culture. Because did it work? Observe to see if your mother and father are happy. And if you observe that they are not happy, do something counterintuitive. Do it differently. You know that you have a right to say no. Know that you have a right to your boundaries. I hope this helps, Raul.
Yes, thank you very much. Lori, so nice to hear your voice. Thank you, ladies. I'll stay mute if that's okay so I can keep listening to your conversation.
Yeah, no problem. This is such a learning curve for me, so I think I know what I have to do next time. But, stay on the line, and we have another caller. So.
Raul, nice to meet you.
Thank you very much.
Ciao.
Ciao.
Adios.
Adios. Where was Raul from? I don't know.
Oh, he's from the West Coast. That I know
okay.
for sure.
Yeah.
So we have a 613 number.
Hello.
Hi. You're on News for the Heart. How can we help you?
Hi, Lori. It's my name's Andrea, and I'd like to thank you so much for bringing these topics to the forefront, because I think we spend a lot of time on material things, and we kind of neglect those heart things. I like News for the Heart that you've got on there. So I guess my point is also, as somebody who's done a lot of work on myself in a variety of ways, one of the things I was wondering, Victoria, if you could speak to a little bit about is the idea of perseverance, because change is so difficult. and so hard to do when we're on this personal journey of recovery or of freedom or of peace of mind, and, you know, how to persevere through that, and also how to develop a certain amount of compassion for oneself as we're going through this process of change. And also, and if you could speak a little bit about this, the perseverance, the compassion, and as well as that, the kind of exercise of working on non-judgmentalness and the ability to, you know, to move through things in a less non-judgmental way, whether it's good or bad or I'm good or I'm bad, and how to be mindful of those things. Could you speak a little bit about that, Victoria?
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Andrea. How insightful and beautiful of a question. I have to say, you know, change is hard. And the reality is we don't have a lot of control over our outcomes and over our life in general, but we have control, even though what I'm about to say, we have control, but it isn't easy to control our mind. And it is a tremendous amount of discipline. I say to people, there is no change without discipline. It's got to be part of the routine. You know, changing neural pathways requires daily work on multi-levels, whether you're going to be...
I'm just going to put you on mute because there's some static in the background. Go
ahead. Okay, cool. So daily working on the change of thought. When you're chiseling at the concretized beliefs, it has to occur in a daily kind of way. I like to say... people need to approach change like they approach fitness. You know, fitness requires to really change at least a 5-day-a-week effort. To maintain, it's about a 2-to-3-day-a-week effort. But to change, it's a 5-day-a-week effort. And the same thing, when you're changing your thinking, it has to occur in a very consistent, in a gentle way. I want to caution people against the inner bully, though, because the inner bully is saying, you know, you didn't do it perfectly, you didn't change enough, and you got to have a lot of self-compassion when you're changing, because you're going to falter, you're going to fall backwards. You know, sometimes I think people get discouraged when they fall backwards, but really I think the 80-20 rule is a way to think about change. 80% of the time you're working on the new behavior. 20% of the time you're falling back to old behaviors, all the while knowing you're building the 80%. So it's a nice, much gentle, and some people say, I can't do 80%. I'm like, okay, let's start with 60-40. 60% of the time you're working on the new behavior, the new way of thinking, the new way of treating yourself, the new way of dealing with your boyfriend, girlfriend, mother, father relationship. You know, it's slow, gentle transformation. And that is what creates permanent transformation, I think. I hope that sort of addresses what you were speaking about, Andrea.
Yes, it does. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Andrea.
You're welcome. Thank you. And I'll sit tight now and continue to listen to the rest of the interview.
Okay,
thank
perfect.
You so much.
Thank you.
All right. So
nice to have the callers. Anyone
it
else?
Is nice.
Yeah, it's
yeah.
Nice.
Anybody
yeah.
that wants to call,
please
you can
do.
Give
we
us
got,
a
I,
call
you know.
At 646-236. Nope, that's not it. 646-668-2070. 646-668-2070. All right. So, well.
Wow.
Deep
conversation.
Some really deep stuff.
Yeah. What kind of time do we have? Because I wanted to.
We do. I mean, we can play with this as much as we want.
Okay.
If we're doing an hour show, we've got, you know, about 11 minutes left.
Okay.
If we go beyond, that's fine.
I want to talk about my workshop that's coming
know.
Up. I have, you know, I just. If anyone's in the Toronto area or even outside the Toronto area, make the trip in. I'm doing a day-long workshop on the 9th, which is next Sunday. Not this Sunday coming, the next one. It's from like 10:30 in the morning to 4:30, only $80, which we decided to do a super, super, super inexpensive because we want lots of people to access the information.
Right.
And it's called the Ultimate Holistic Anti-Anxiety Workshop.
Nice.
You know, I'm going to be teaching people techniques to rewire the brain. I'm going to be teaching people techniques to really, really work on the big three, guilt, anger, and shame,
yes.
which are such huge contributors to anxiety. I'm going to really talk about the bully and how to neutralize the bully that I've spoke about into and transform that bully into an inner coach. I also am going to talk about how to anchor in new beliefs, an actual system to bring in new neural pathways, not just the visualizing, but actually a system to bring in and anchor in, an anchoring in process of new beliefs that will help a person with that torturous belief system that brings on the anxiety experience, which I have infinite compassion for because it seems so overwhelming to people. But it is transformational. It is something that can change. It absolutely is something that can change.
Right. Well, I mean, I think it's a great opportunity for people. It would be nice if we could even do something so that it's online so that people could join at some point, maybe not this one.
Oh, that would be great, like a Google Hangout.
We could do a Hangout.
I would love that. That would be so cool. Well, maybe we could do it with this one. Who knows? I mean, you've got the technology now. You're figuring out this technology
beautifully. We're figuring it out.
But people can register at my website, self-culture.com. So self, S-E-L-F, dash C-U-L-T-U-R-E, self-culture.com. And you can register right there through PayPal, which makes it super easy. We're doing a one-hour free intro evening on the Thursday prior, the 6th. And it's all happening at DuPont in Bathurst at this really beautiful Ayurvedic clinic that we're going to have an expert, Andrea Oliveira, who's an Ayurvedic specialist, also talking and teaching a technique at the workshop. So, you know, people will get a lot of value. And so if you suffer from anxiety and you want the holistic, and I'm going to be talking also about supplements to amino acids, fish oils, et cetera, to help with the brain and when it's experiencing anxiety. Mm-hmm. So people don't get access to this information just generally, so it's really nice to have an expert sort of bring it forth to them in a really nice packaged way,
right?
Which is a day-long workshop and, cool. You know, really well-priced as well.
I have very well-priced.
Yeah. People can also reach me on Twitter. My Twitter handle is @selfculturenow. And love to hear from you on Facebook, which is Find Yourself Dash Culture, or me, Victoria Laurient Fabish. Victoria Laurient Dash Fabish. That is my name, Lori.
Yes.
Can you believe it's like I stumble on my name? What is that?
Yeah.
Yeah. Interesting. Interesting. Yeah. I think about people, you know, people try to type in Fabish and it's always F-A.
Uh-huh.
It's just F-A-I-B-I-S-H.
Yes.
Yeah.
And Laurient with an E instead of an A, which I keep.
Laurient dash Fabish. It's a long name.
It is.
It's a high vibration name. Lots of letters.
There you go.
Yeah.
There you go. Lovely.
Yeah.
Okay. So we'll hopefully get more information on that. And maybe we can do something again and promote one that we can do online.
Okay.
What we can play with.
I think that would be awesome.
It would be.
Yeah.
It would be, for sure.
So come online and join us on the journey.
That's it.
Yeah.
That's it. Well, we will have you back next month anyway.
Okay, cool.
And
exactly.
We'll keep building some momentum.
Absolutely.
This,
Want to hear from people. So anyone that wants to call in, I'm here. I'm here for you.
We have a little bit more time.
Yeah.
Do you want to talk? I really like, you know, transform the inner bully. And I know that you've sort of talked about it, but what are some things that we can do? Because there, you know, that bully inside of us is probably the most difficult that we have.
But it's trying to benefit us in some way.
Sure.
Every negative thought, behavior, belief, you've got to look at it as if in some way there is a positive version of itself, but it is manifesting in a misaligned way.
Right.
And is showing up as the bully or the guilt or
right.
the shame or whatever it is. So it's so, so important to really, really know that that bully is not just there to torture you. You know, it'll only be there to torture you if you let it free and let it loose. You got to go in there and talk to this part of you and visualize this bully as if it's a schoolyard bully, just incredibly rebellious.
Right.
And incredibly, you know, kind of angry and like a hurt, angry teenager energy. And you got to go, okay, you know, what happens to a tantrumous child if you yell at it and say, I want you out of here?
Right.
It'll simply hide. It'll yell more. It'll torture you more. So
right.
instead, you need to get on your knees in your mind's eye and look at that bully eye to eye and go, I'm not going to shut you down. I'm not going to criticize you. I'm not going to judge you. I'm not going to, you know, shun you. I'm going to listen to you finally. And the bully doesn't yell so loud when you do that.
Right. Give him a voice.
Give her, give it a voice.
That's right.
You know? And let it express itself when you ask the question, what are you trying to do for me? You keep showing up in my life. So what are you trying to do for me? By the way, you're not succeeding at doing it because obviously, you know, but what are you trying to do for me? And the bully will say, I'm trying to, so many things,
right.
You know, there's so many
right.
things. I'm trying to make you a better person.
Right.
You know, I'm trying to make you succeed. You know, I'm trying to get you out of that really bad situation, you know? And you're like, oh, that's what you're trying to do for me? Boy, you're not doing it in a way that, that even remotely works for me. But I get that that's a really positive impetus, a really positive intention. And then we go about the business of saying that positive intention, we cannot throw the baby out with the bathwater. How can you help? How can you make that keep happening for me in a more aligned, positive, functional, healthy way? And then slowly in your mind's eye, what usually happens is that bully starts to transform from this surly, rebellious bully. And slowly, 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 it starts to turn into this positive, more adult coach that is here to support you and is here to teach you good things about life. And so if the thing is, it's trying to get you out of that negative situation, well, how can you do it without constantly criticizing me? Or it's trying to make you do more, be more successful, but that incredibly torturous, critical way of being is not working. Right. It's just causing the self-esteem to go down the tubes. But the coach can start to give you positive feedback and encouragement and positive affirmation and acknowledgement. You're doing great. Keep going. You know, I believe in you. I trust in your abilities. And suddenly you have this assistance energy, this positive coaching, supportive energy, really, really changing the neural pathway from that inner bully to that inner coach. And it's powerful.
It is powerful.
And it works. That's the point, by the way. I would not be telling anybody this if it didn't work. It works every day in my office and I see successful transformation.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it is. Well, and I feel blessed to do it, to be able to help people.
Perfect. Well, this is the hour, so
okay.
We could probably end it here. It's been a great...
Can I do my websites? A couple? Okay.
Yes,
so
please.
Self-Culture is my website where you can register for the workshop, which is happening on the 9th.
Self-Culture.com.
That's right. Is where you can register for the workshop, is where you can buy my book. And by the way, we're doing no shipping and handling, so people can just buy the book and get it ordered right to their door.
Nice.
It's called Find Your Self-Culture, Moving from Depression and Anxiety to Monumental Self-Acceptance. And my main website is visualizationworks.com, visualizationworks.com, where there's free articles, there's all my videos, which are on YouTube, but part of my website as well, so you can just hook into the videos that way. And communicate with me online. I love Facebook and Twitter and all those things.
Lovely.
Okay.
All right.
Join my mailing list.
So you have been listening to the first show of News for the Heart, and very excited. And thank you very much, Victoria.
Thank you, Lori.
It's been wonderful. And we will be back next month. I don't know what their schedule is going to be, but we will let you know. Certainly.
We'll keep you posted.
Keep you posted. Check out my Facebook. That's usually where I let people know what's happening. So that's Lori Houston on Facebook. All right. So
blessings.
Yay. thanks for listening.
Bye.